the leader that defines the way. Find yourself and others with strategic change. This is The Path to Success. Broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters.
Well, good morning. I'm Michelle Matthews, and here we are for another edition of Growth Matters. And today we're going to be talking about sustainability. And I have two guests in the studio who this is a passion for, and probably they would say has something to do with some life calling work in this area. So we have Suzanne Burns, who is the Executive Director of Sustainable Atlanta. And Sustainable Atlanta really focuses on advancing the health, prosperity, and quality of life for all people in Metro Atlanta. And they really do that by thinking about ways to ensure environmental stewardship, economic development, and social equity. So welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we also have Art Frazier, who is the Director of Facilities and Facilities Management and Services at Spelman College, and he's very active in this whole space of sustainability and can talk to us a little bit about things that are happening on Spelman's campus as well as the other efforts he's involved in. So welcome, Art.
Thank you.
So before we even go too far down the path, let's talk a little bit about sort of the definition of sustainability. And Suzanne, you know, how would you characterize that? I think people hear that term all the time, but what's sort of the key thing we really need to know about that?
In my mind, there are several different dimensions to sustainability that it's important to keep in mind when you're thinking about this. I think ultimately, if you want to go back to maybe the most formal definition that came out of a commission related to the UN 20 years ago, it's really about using resources today in a way that doesn't impact future generations' ability to have resources for their use. So it's really taking that long-term view and ensuring that we're not depleting things, that we're not running in a deficit mode so that we leave this place for the generations behind us. I think in my mind, another big dimension of sustainability is about integration. It is about the overlap of so many different ways that we categorize our lives and our work, whether it is around environment, around economy, around people, around places. It's seeing this interwoven web of all of these things and knowing that the way that we maybe approached those efforts in the past is going to look very different in the future, and it's going to depend on how we can see those interactions.
Yeah. You know, it is something that sort of day-to-day, if you think about just your consciousness, there's so many ways in which just little things make a difference between whether we are making sure that the planet is a good place for those that come behind us. So I'm really interested in talking with you all about the topic in general. But Suzanne, also tell us a little bit about your background, and then also tell us a little bit about Sustainable Atlanta and sort of its genesis and what it's
sure.
up to.
My background was from an engineering studies program and some sense of frustration that there was not necessarily a way to move from a traditional engineering platform into a more environmentally focused area, and that was way back in the day when such programs didn't really exist. So I left a large school engineering program to go to a very small college that had a rare environmental sustainability program at the time and focused on policy. So after I came out of school, my campus in the last chapter of that college time was a beautiful, pristine mountain campus that sat directly next to a former defense munitions facility. It was a national priority list contaminated site. There were community engagement and awareness issues, and I had a chance to work as a part of the campus in the community, and it spurred some deep interest in me in working in community around these type of issues down the road. That took a little bit of a back burner while I worked in the consulting field for seven, 8 years around environmental protection issues, largely working as a contractor for the EPA and some extent the Department of Defense. That led me to the state of Georgia, the Department of Natural Resources, and a little forward-thinking division called the Pollution Prevention Assistance Division that was helping business and industry look for ways to reduce the impacts of their operations and save money and become more efficient. And that led me to Sustainable Atlanta. In terms of where Sustainable Atlanta as an organization came from, we really were an initiative that started several years ago to help the city of Atlanta understand where they should be in terms of leadership on this new frontier of sustainability. So we did a good bit of work in convening subject matter experts from the private sector, the public sector, to look at different policy issues, whether it was around recycling and materials management or energy and greenhouse gas reduction, water protection, water quality. And we helped to formulate a policy agenda for the early City of Atlanta sustainability operations. From there, we moved into a slightly different focus, looking more broadly at the region and how we could build on that strength around relationships and convening and connecting folks who were working in very complementary ways, but in a disconnected fashion.
Yeah, so I'm really happy that we kind of have two sides of the same coin, maybe. You know, you're looking at the regional from a broad perspective. Art, I know you're very involved in this issue as well, but you are bringing that sustainable concept to campus and helping the women of Spelman also understand the implications for that. So before you talk a little bit about what Spelman's sort of role and position is as they think about this issue, tell us how you came to be really involved in this arena. Give us a little nickel tour of your background.
Well, I attended the University of Pennsylvania, and my undergraduate degree was a program called Design of the Environment, which was a pre-architecture, pre-city planning, pre-landscape architecture program where we really looked at designing new environments and minimizing our impact on the existing environments. And stayed on there and got a master's in architecture and practiced architecture here in Atlanta about 15 years before going to work for colleges and really working on designing new buildings for colleges and working with contractors and architects to add buildings at Emory and at Spelman that really served the institution well in their use of resources. Conserving our resources was a primary initiative, objective of our original green buildings, so that they weren't using a whole lot of water, using a whole lot of energy, and were easy to maintain. Institutions tend to build institutional quality buildings that are going to be there 50, 100 years. I mean, we have a building from 1886 on Spelman's campus, and I expect it will be there quite a few more years. So they really, when LEED started, they took a leadership role in a lot of the green building design because they were already building buildings to last.
Okay. And also sort of to put it out here on the table, you know, do you both, I'd be interested in both of your perspectives, are you seeing this whole issue getting more traction and people understanding the business and the economic impact of it versus seeing it as, you know, tree hugger, just people that are involved in the environment? I'd be interested in mm-hmm. kind of how you're seeing that evolution of thought of the general public in this arena.
Well, I think from my perspective, absolutely. You see this rare convergence of so many different forces and factors right now that are at play in the market. I think whether it is sort of a growing sense of general distrust and folks who are looking for transparency and credibility in operations, you have businesses that are responding to customer demands, and I think the LEED in buildings is a perfect example of how with one standard in place, you started to transform entire industries, because now you had architects and designers who were saying, I need to get this point for my building so that I can hit a certification goal. I need carpet that has recycled content. Okay, carpet industry, what have you got? And you saw an entire industry wake up and respond and say, okay, not only do we need to be able to provide a product that has that sustainability attribute that our customers are looking for, but let's see this as the business opportunity ahead. So it's not just recycled content. It's what's the toxicity of the materials being used. It's what is the supply chain impact of all the different components going into that product. It's, you know, what are our purchasing practices? What are our labor practices? And so it started with something as small as recycled content and started to have this ripple through an entire industry. And I think you can look at pretty much every major industry segment right now, and you'll see that whether it's Walmart, who is demanding of their suppliers that they demonstrate sustainability throughout their supply chain, or whether it is the demand coming from the built environment and LEED, it's going across every sector, and it's just becoming a new way of doing business.
Yeah, Art, how are you seeing that play itself out with the students at Spelman? So clearly the sustainability efforts start at the administration, but I imagine it has also something to do with what the interest is of the students and making, making sure that you're kind of staying with things that are important to them as well.
Yes, we have a number of students on campus who are very interested in that. I'm blessed to have 4 Sustainable Spelman interns who work with me to help connect to the students and work with them on making them aware of how we use our resources and how we can better reduce them, and also doing some educational programs to teach them more about sustainability. We're also working on incorporating sustainability throughout the curriculum. We've incorporated it into our new student orientation. So when students arrive, we tell them where we've been and where we want to go with sustainability. And our vision is one of the key phrases in our vision is practicing sustainability as a way of life. So we help define that for them so that during their 4 years at Spelman that they're aware of that. And as they take showers and throw away items, to use that term, that they think about that. What can be recycled? What can be composted? I always say recycle first, trash second. So they're great to work with. I have a college-age daughter. She's actually in grad school now. And I always tell them I need them to speak to their peers. When I say it, it's like daddy speaking. So certainly leverage them and their connections and their understanding of their peers to help implement our initiatives across the campus.
So, Art, even though you are at an institution of higher learning, and so you've got students, which are, you know, future business and community leaders, I'm sure some of the principles and the practices that you all had to do as an organization at Spelman, would be of benefit for our listeners to sort of understand. How do you, if this is something that you're beginning to see, yes, we want to have more emphasis on, maybe through learning a little of your journey, what are some key things for an organization that really wants to begin to be more focused on sustainability? What are some things that, from a leadership perspective, they need to be thinking about? And then I'll ask Suzanne if there's other things as you see from a Atlanta region perspective that would be helpful for our listeners to know.
Well, certainly some planning. We were fortunate to incorporate sustainability into our strategic plan when we redid it in 2008 and really looked at incorporating sustainability not only with respect to the environment, but also into the academics and into the curriculum. And into we had 3 components, environmental, academic, and community. Because we feel it's also important to educate our community, not only our staff, faculty, and students, but our alumna and the community at large that surrounds us so that they are also aware of these sustainability issues. We have a great leader with sustainability in our president. She speaks about it all the time and really has taken it beyond environmental. We look at it in three areas: environmental, personal, and communal. With the personal piece being about each and every one of us, our own personal well-being and maintaining that, which is critically important in the African-American community with a lot of the health issues that we see students arriving on campus on. She really stressed that these students, as they strive for excellence over 4 years, that they take care of themselves and be aware of those things. And a lot of the health issues we see in the community are related to environmental impacts. So these things do overlap. The third dimension we talk about is communal sustainability, really sustaining Spelman's brand for excellence and our mission for positive social change. So that also ties into our community aspects of sustainability in terms of promoting that beyond our gates. We work with a lot of other historically black colleges to show them what we're doing so that they can also implement these things on their campuses and learn from our journey.
Yes. Suzanne, what advice do you give to leaders, as I said, that are interested in being more aware of sustainability and incorporating it into the work that they do? How do you help them think about that and begin a more focused journey in that direction?
Well, I think as you've heard Art talk about the process that they've gone through at Spelman and some of the structure they have in place, I think if you strip that back to its core, there's some lessons that virtually any type of organization or community in that, for that matter, can take from that. So whether you are a small business, a large business, an institution, a faith-based community, a neighborhood, I think you've essentially got some elements here around having some sort of leader at the top who's willing to use their voice to rally folks around this issue. So that's going to be really critical regardless of what type of organization or context you're in. And you've got to build some sort of governance structure to, I think, see this move forward. You know, all of us could point to many initiatives over the years that I think if you don't have some type of governance in place, it can be a one-off and, okay, it was a great one-day event, but what's the long-term outcome from that? And so I think, you know, whether it is, again, these different types of contexts, whatever that governance structure needs to be, I think it's got to have folks who have some sense of accountability for moving this forward on an ongoing basis. There's got to be a representation from the different stakeholders that have something to gain or to lose from this being successful. So, you know, if it's in a business, do you have folks from finance? Do you have human resources? Do you have your manufacturing design? Do you have operations? What are the different dimensions of your business operation? Do you have sales and marketing? They need to all be at the table to understand how this is important to their part of that work. If it's a campus, you know, again, do you have different departments represented from the curriculum side and the operations side? If it's a community, do you have the residents? Do you have the businesses? Do you have the institutions in the community? Who are those folks who have a stake, and let them all be a part of helping to build this? And then I think it's a fairly sort of standard framework that you need to be looking at implementing, from initial goal setting, sort of assessing what are the circumstances that you're operating in right now, what are the forces that are going to be driving change in the future for you. How do you set goals around things that you want to achieve, what's important to you, whether it is reducing your water consumption because that's a huge cost factor for you. You know that it's an area of risk because in the future that's not a guaranteed resource for you and your business might not be able to operate at current levels of water consumption. If it's energy, maybe, again, you're a church and you have a certain amount of revenue coming in the door that has to go for operations and mission. And every extra dollar you're spending on heating that congregation facility is a dollar that can't go towards missions. So maybe that's a priority for you. Or maybe if you're a community, it's a public health issue. You have really high levels of asthma in the community, and so that's something you want to focus on. Come together across those stakeholders and say, this is going to be a priority now. What do we want to do about it? And move from that really into identifying some projects, setting, you know, some feasibility plans in place, and then really I think the final stage of this that we see is important for a truly sustainable effort is to measure and monitor, and to again know that because you took the steps in the front end to set some governance in place and accountability, that someone is able to say, okay, we set a priority around reducing childhood asthma rates. We saw that one strategy that could address that was doing 50% of the homes in the community are going to get an indoor air quality assessment and some seed money for mitigating some of the issues in those homes. Now, did that get implemented? Was it measured? Did you see the asthma rates go down? So how are you then moving forward in building towards future outcomes?
So in kind of going back and piggybacking off that sort of last part about evaluation and monitoring, so Art, talk to us a little bit about some of the success Spelman has sort of attributed to having that long-term vision from the top and bringing in sustainable efforts. What are things that have changed on campus as a result of this?
Well, we have instituted green cleaning campus-wide in all of our buildings. We've constructed two LEED certified buildings.
And what is a LEED certified building for our listeners?
LEED is an acronym, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It's a scoring system, a rating system for our buildings, and really looking at how our buildings perform in key areas, their impact on the site, their impact in water use, energy use, and indoor environmental quality. Not only conserving the resources, but providing a clean and healthy environment for our students to live in and work in is critical. So we've done two buildings under that program, and also have looked at the LEED. They have a program called for existing buildings operation and management. And we've taken that program and incorporated that into our operations plans and taught our maintenance staff these issues so that they can maintain those buildings in a sustainable manner. And we find that's critical, that they are aware of this. They're in those buildings every day. The custodians are in the buildings every day. They can identify where we have water leaks or where lights are being left on and where there are opportunities to reduce energy use. So they're my eyes in the field. And they've really gotten interested in it and engaged in it. They heard everybody else talking about it, but they had no clue what it was. So they've really gotten excited about learning these things. Take them to training programs all the time so that they can learn more about this and help us implement these things.
I think that touches on a really good point. And that is, you know, if Art and Spelman hadn't taken the time to bring the custodial service team into the program when they were developing this, then, you know, they missed the potential benefit of those eyes on the street, the eyes that are in the buildings every day. And I think, you know, again, that's something that could be as true in a community or a business as a campus setting. You know, I can't tell you how many business leaders I've spoken with who have gotten some of the best solutions that saved them money and resources and maybe even opened up whole new product markets because they were listening to someone on that shop floor who is the maintenance engineer who came up with a great fix because they saw this day after day as something that didn't make sense.
And so, Suzanne, you mentioned that your organization, you get involved in policy work because you're looking at what's happened regionally. And so talk to us a little bit about what some of those key issues might be that are would be of a focus so that our listeners can sort of understand how policy, in addition to practice, must come together in order mm-hmm. to make changes.
Well, I can say that in the past, Sustainable Atlanta had a very narrow policy focus. And some of the lessons learned from that time were that there's an awful lot of education and awareness raising that has to happen in order to have a truly informed constituency that will support the sort of progressive policies that need to be in place to really allow the most sustainable practices to happen. And so a lot of our work right now is shifted less away from that direct policy development and any sort of advocacy role and more into that engagement education piece so that we can help people to build that basic understanding about what are some of the issues. I can tell you that I think there are going to be some very interesting changes ahead in the next couple of years in the state of Georgia, whether it is looking at the policy barriers to the real explosion in the renewable energy sector in the state. You have a tremendous amount of momentum. I think I heard just recently that Georgia had been ranked as number one growth for the solar industry in the United States. And that is with some fairly restrictive policies in place. So you look at what happens when you remove those restrictive policies, and now you have a homegrown industry that can take off and provide a real source of jobs and economic development around the state.
Yeah, I'm curious how both of you, as you talk to your colleagues of around the country, how does Georgia fare? And I know you are very connected to the other schools here in Atlanta that are involved in this issue. So, you know, how are we comparing to our counterparts in other parts of the country?
Well, I think we have some real assets here that to some extent we've been good at leveraging, and in others I think we've still got a lot of opportunity around. The clean tech sector is booming here in the region, particularly Metro Atlanta, but I think the state of Georgia as a whole. And so that's something that I think you'll continue to see a lot of growth in. I think that we have a sort of nascent startup community here around what are now being sort of called social enterprises, you know, smaller startups that are explicitly formed with the intent of having some social benefit and making money along the way. This is not necessarily an entirely charitable sort of endeavor. And we have a thriving community here that's beginning to grow in that area. Art, you want to jump in with any particular?
Well, Spelman, along with 15 other Georgia colleges, has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment, which I think in the country is about 680 colleges that have signed all together. So there's 15 of us here in Georgia. And, you know, Emory and Agnes Scott and Georgia Tech and Kennesaw and Barry, we collaborate with them all the time. We have a Georgia Campus Sustainability Network where we do some programs where we share information. And if I've got a question about how Emory's doing something or Agnes Scott's doing something, I just send an email, pick up the phone. Folks are really collaborative and very willing to share their successes, their horror stories, and help you get to where they are. So it's very promising, I think, here within the state, the number of colleges. Georgia Tech has quite a bit of solar and also a lot of underground water storage on their campus. I think they're second only to the airport within the city of Atlanta in terms of storing storm water. That they're reusing in cooling towers or for irrigation on their campus. So we've looked at what they've done. We've done some. Emory's also done some. And you know, so there's always willing to help people.
Wow. I actually have a question for both of you. I read a lot of articles. I'm very into sustainable, and I know my generation is. But how realistic is? I read all the time. I mean, people are growing food in pods. You have algae being used for oxygen, and I look at these future housings where everything's completely sustainable. It's stacked up. Your oxygen's made there. Your food's made there. How realistic do you think that is, and how far off, if you guys do think it's realistic?
I think absolutely that's the direction that development is going. You look at, there's been some interesting research just in the last year. The Brookings Institute and the Atlanta Regional Commission worked together with, was it George Washington University, I think, on what's called the Walk Up Report, and you can find it online fairly easily, that looks at the shifts in real estate development trends. And just shows some fairly startling numbers when you look at the latest real estate cycle, particularly from 2009 to 2013. And they're showing a 60% of the growth in the real estate market right now is happening in more dense, walkable districts. You're seeing premiums for retail in those settings, for sale residential in those settings, for office in those settings. And so I think that's starting to send this really clear signal to the massive development infrastructure in this region. I mean, Atlanta is known for our building construction. You know, we built the model for sprawl that we then shared with the rest of the world and saw that take off like wildfire. I think you're seeing that, wait a minute, now we maybe have an opportunity to define what is that next model that we could be the leader on. And I think that is going to happen in these smaller, dense areas. Mm-hmm. I think that you'll see that more with, you know, the standard being lead construction and you know, lead for neighborhood development and other sort of standard setting around the built environment and how to be just hyper efficient there. I think you'll see it becoming more a part of the infrastructure, whether that is you know, going in and retrofitting with things like something called green infrastructure, where you're looking at sort of an alternative to a pipe system for stormwater. Which has a lot of benefits, a lot of parks and green space benefits. You have infrastructure opportunities around energy where you might be able to provide district-level systems, and I know that's something that the universities have been a great leader in. But I think you'll see more and more of the built environment start to take that shape, whether it's retrofitting what we have in the past or new construction.
Kevin's question sort of brought to mind when something he said, which is, you know, his generation is very interested. I mean, I'm curious, sort of, what do you think is the sort of biggest challenge for maybe generations that are a little bit older that's not sort of their natural way of thinking things? I mean, you know, what's sort of the biggest hurdle or misconception that we can talk to our listeners about that maybe has people this morning think a little bit differently about this topic if it's not something that just naturally is a part of their value system?
I face that challenge all the time. I think people get comfortable with the way they do things. For instance, when we implemented green cleaning on campus, we have housekeepers that have been on our campus, you know, 20, 30 years. And this is the way they've done it. This is the way they wanted to do it. You know, what's wrong with this? You know, so we had to really start to get them to open their minds and question how they were doing things. And I've been at Spelman now 9 years, and I don't say this as much as I did during the first 3 years, but I used to always say, just because that's the way it's always been done doesn't mean it's right.
Right.
So we had to really start to look at what is right and get them to give up their bottles of bleach and other chemicals that they were using. And now they've embraced it. They definitely see that the chemicals that they're using are not only healthier for our students, but they're healthier to them as they're working in there and applying these buildings. So they're no longer inhaling bleach all the time.
Well, I think on the whole generational shift in sustainability, you know, you hear an awful lot of talk about sustainability being really a megatrend on the scale of some of the technology megatrends of the last generation. And I think if you look at the generation of folks who are, you know, maybe a few years out of school now, you know, you hear the term a technology native, that this is a generation of folks who grew up with computers in their home. They grew up comfortable with that technology. I heard the other day for the first time that we're now looking at a generation of what will be sustainability natives. So I think, you know, again, it's the students that are coming out of colleges now who are not limited in the way I was 25 years ago in school of having one discipline that maybe had a couple of classes around sustainability. Right. Now you can study sustainability whether you're in law, engineering, the arts, right. you name it. You're going to have courses that cut across those disciplines. And it just becomes, I think, so much more a part of the way you see the world. And that presents some challenges, certainly in the workplace, as an older generation who maybe thinks a little bit more in a silo has to embrace this different way of thinking. And you know, I think ultimately we're companies and operations that can see the need that this younger generation has for purpose are going to be successful.
Yeah, and so without putting Kevin on the spot with what his age is, since we are kind of talking about this from a forward-looking perspective, you know, what do you think you and your peers are looking at that signals to you that a business is involved in this issue, and although they might be trying to make a profit, they also are conscious about what's happening? I mean, are there a couple things you would be looking for?
Definitely. And when the trend started, a lot of people just used the green movement. They're like, well, we're green in this. But my generation, we like to see a lot of giving back. If someone's in the community and they integrate themselves in the community and they sort of see what's going on in the community and then they try to help in that aspect, that shows a lot to us, and actions speak louder than words in that kind of field. So that's what we look for in companies, just to see if they're giving back and sort of putting their ear to the ground in the community and then responding to what the community wants.
Yeah, which, although I didn't set that up as such, it gives me a great segue to ask a little bit about this new, I don't know if you call it a program or initiative, of Beto Eco District communities that both of you are involved in. Mm-hmm. Suzanne, you're involved in it because your organization is sort of leading that path, and Art is involved in a community that's going to participate in this. So why don't both of you give us a little bit about what that initiative is, and then Art, you help us understand why this is something that you wanted to bring to the Spelman and West End community.
Sure, I'd be glad to give you a little context on this. So I guess probably in the last 5 years, you started to see some movement on the West Coast, not surprisingly, around a slightly different approach to really urban land use planning in communities. And it has taken off and started to show ripples around the country. I mean, really, ultimately, some of these concepts came from abroad, from Asia and Europe. But they've taken root in a lot of cities around the U.S. now. And the idea is that, you know, in the past, we've done a great job in many ways at having urban planning processes that brought community members together for a day to weigh in on what do they want to see in a community, and then a plan is produced, and it's a beautiful, glossy thing, and it maybe gets integrated into some codes, but ultimately, in a lot of cases, it sits on the shelf waiting for some grand implementation dollars to arrive. And there's a sense of sort of plan fatigue in a lot of ways around around cities now. And yet this great opportunity of, again, younger generation who wants to be involved in something that has purpose. They want to see businesses involved in giving back in a community. And so we see that there's sort of a sweet spot right now where the approach that started on the West Coast, predominantly in Portland, built sort of that governance structure and some of that measuring and monitoring into what had been a sort of a one-way land use planning approach. And so it's about ultimately bringing a community together to say, what are the things that we care about? What are our sustainability pain points? How do we want to collectively set some goals around those? What are the projects that we feel like will have some impact? And let's make sure that we have a balance of projects. So if we decide that our priorities are around local food and around energy, then maybe we want to pick a couple of very short-term tangible projects around getting community members out to create some gardens and working with local restaurants to see if they might be willing to source from some of the local gardens. So, you know, very tangible, something that any member of a community can be a part of. At the same time, let's look at the bigger kind of project opportunities. So at that very system scale, you know, something around energy. Again, is it a matter of distributing light bulbs to residents in a community? Is it a matter of doing large-scale energy audits at commercial buildings within the district? Is it larger system sort of district heating and cooling type things? But looking at those things in tandem and knowing that there's importance in giving people a way to get involved at that community level in sustainability where it seems to resonate most at that neighborhood scale, as well as looking at the long-term projects. And then part of what we're doing at Sustainable Atlanta is taking that approach, putting it in a very specific Metro Atlanta context, and seeing this as a way to leverage a lot of great resources that we have out there. So whether those are resources in our academic institutions, in our corporate world, in the small business community, in the faith community, how do we bring those to bear in a neighborhood setting where people are saying we care about sustainability and we want to do something about it?
So specifically, where is these initiatives being focused in the Atlanta area, and how many of them are going on?
Right now, you have one that I would say is more mature than the rest. That is in the Midtown community. So we were part of a team in 2012 that worked with them to apply this framework very generally. And they set a number of goals and are now well underway in implementing some projects.
Give us an example of something that's kind of been brought to bear in that community if you sort of have an idea that...
Sure. Well, one of the areas that they wanted to see priority was around better capture of the food waste coming from the restaurant community in that district. And that district was largely defined by sort of a commercial boundary with some residential component. But the food waste coming from restaurants was something that they saw as a concern that they could address and that could have some cost savings for those restaurants and some good benefit for them. So that's something that they're now putting together some sort of collaborations among the restaurants to look at different solutions and how they can compost that and divert it. Increasing miles of bicycle lanes in the community was something that they wanted to focus on. So they're now actively doing that. And that tends to take a little bit more of that infrastructure mm-hmm. project side where, you know, there are larger budgets and longer timelines, but they're already seeing results. The other communities that we're working with very actively right now to test this are the Atlanta University Center, the community of Lakewood Heights, and the community of Lithonia. And we specifically chose those. They approached us with interest, and we felt like they represented a diversity of different community types. So that university setting, a suburban town center, which Atlanta has such a multitude of, we need to find a way to revitalize those areas and to capture that development wave that we know is coming into those areas in a sustainable way. And then a inner city neighborhood that we knew had some opportunities around local businesses in the area and a lot of available housing.
So since the Atlanta University is one of those areas, how is this playing out, Art, and how is Spelman involved in this?
Well, one of the many hats I wear, I'm chairman of the board of the University Community Development Corporation, which we are one of the institutions in the Atlanta University Center that's a member of that. And UCDC operates to do community redevelopment around our colleges to improve the environment that we work in and that our students live in on a daily basis. Over the years, we've done a lot of facility work in terms of rebuilding abandoned properties and cleaning up the neighborhood. And now we've moved more toward economic redevelopment. And this eco-district planning fits into that nicely in that it's very comprehensive beyond just the physical and really starts to look at social equity issues in the community. Education and crime, as well as the sort of regional use of resources. I mean, Kevin asked the question regarding at a house scale, growing your own food and generating your own energy. But if we look at that at a more of a regional area, the economics of that become a lot more practical. You can look at some of the concepts that Susan mentioned in terms of capturing that food waste and then, say, using it to generate energy in a greenhouse that's going to grow lettuce that is then sent back to the restaurants that generate the food waste to begin with, or capturing the fryer grease and using that as biodiesel to power the transportation system. But really looking at those on a local level and not sending our trash to a landfill out in Lithonia or some other community, but finding ways to reuse that within our community to benefit other things. And food is a big issue in our area because it's really a food desert. So that will certainly be one of the areas that we look to address.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many intersections in that West End, Atlanta University Center. I mean, we had Bill Bowling on, so as you all are talking about food, his organization obviously is doing so many different things. The stadium is in that neighborhood, and you're seeing the challenges of how do we make decisions about growth and doing different things and getting that community involvement. So a lot of things are happening over in that area that, like you said, are possibilities for opportunities for seeing things and doing things differently and becoming a model for others. So if I was a listener who is interested in this whole area and I didn't quite know where to start, I want to get some more education, what advice would you give to somebody that has an interest in this, whether they're high school or college level, that they say, yeah, I think this might be something that career-wise nicely aligns with my values. What advice would you give them to help them be successful in this arena?
Well, I can tell you that we are at the beginning of building some structure that I think folks can plug into a little more readily to get engaged and to figure out how they can shift maybe their professional life or their home life a little bit more in this direction. Right now we have a online community that we've launched in the last few months that I would love to send folks to learn more about what's happening, and that's called lookupatl.org. And the idea was that prior to us launching this, we really felt like we didn't have a gathering place for this this whole movement of people and ideas around Metro Atlanta to come together, to learn from each other, to figure out who's doing what, to figure out how you could plug in, what were the opportunities for you personally, for your organization, and to be able to inspire each other. We see that there is this tremendous bounty of work that's happening around sustainability at every scale of the economy and the culture in Metro Atlanta. And yet we don't have a place to start to capture that and to tell those stories and to inspire people and to help them to see that there are people in schools and churches and businesses and neighborhoods all around this region that care about these issues that are doing something about that. So Look Up Atlanta is a place where you can learn about what's happening. You can connect with other people that are doing this work. You can find ways that you can act together to maybe further that work.
Yeah, and you're there with a number of people. You mentioned you have interns. What kind of advice are you giving them that if this is something that they're interested in pursuing career-wise, that they should be thinking about?
They look at it from a variety of different angles. My interns, I think two of them are environmental studies majors. One of them is interested in going into law. She has a goal to become the general counsel of the EPA. We look at, you know, they have different interests in this, you know, the social equity side as well as the environmental side. So I lead them into different resources around town and on the internet. We are a member of AASHE, which is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. And they have a great website that shows what other schools are doing, whether it's what student groups are doing on their campus or what academics are doing in terms of incorporating things into the curriculum, or whether it's what operations folks are doing, or whether it's recycling. It's got, you know, I go there first. One of my architecture professors used to always say, look there and then draw. instead of reinventing the wheel, let's see what other people's have other people have done and learn from that and grow from that.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that, you know, really for anyone who is fairly new to this whole field and feels like it's something that they want to explore, don't feel like you have to be the environmental major or the environmental professional in your organization to transition into a more sustainable type of position or operation. I think you really can come at this from about any dimension of work, whether it is, as you mentioned, legal, whether it's something related to the arts, whether it is something related to sales and marketing, whether it's operations and engineering. There's some hook into this whole new way of looking at things that you can build into a career.
Yeah. So give us, as we're beginning to wind down the program, what are a couple of things you want to highlight about what your organizations are doing so we have a sense of how you're moving forward, whether that's a particular project or initiative or some event that is up and coming for you?
Well, as I mentioned, Look Up Atlanta is a community that we're very much trying to build right now. So would love to have the listeners go and check it out and become a part of that growing conversation. We are taking this eco district work to a level that we think will be groundbreaking. We see that this metro area has potential to have really not just one or two or three eco districts, but a whole network of dozens of eco districts. And we see that there is potential transformation in connecting those districts and starting to create this real web that are learning from each other and building on the successes and not reinventing wheels at every point along the way. So we're excited to see that work move forward and stay tuned. This wave of the first beta communities will just be the first. We have a half dozen or more waiting in the wings for the next round. So I think pay attention and you'll see one coming near you.
Great. All right.
Well, I think our major initiative is related to our American College and University President's Climate Commitment. We have just submitted our latest 2 years of greenhouse gas inventory. So we have a record of our greenhouse gas emissions over the past 5 years. And last year we submitted a climate action plan that calls to reduce our greenhouse gas inventory by 50% from our 2009 baseline emissions by the year 2031, which will be the 150th anniversary of the college. And by the 175th anniversary, we have a goal of achieving 100% emission reduction.
Wow.
We've already reduced over 15% to date. And that climate action plan tells the story of where we've been and lays out some energy conservation measures that we plan to undertake between now and 2031 to achieve that reduction.
I can't, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. So given that you've got some far-reaching goals in particularly this one area, how are you balancing that with, I guess, maybe the perception I have that in order to implement things, it costs something? You know, I think sometimes that's what impedes people from thinking that they can go green or they can do some of these things because they perceive it's going to be a much greater cost than whatever their current operations is. So you said 15% reduction. Kind of how did that play itself already in the budgeting process and just the cost piece?
Well, it's paid for itself already, I would say. We're reducing our energy use, so our power bill's going down. We're reducing our water use, and Atlanta has the most expensive water in the country, so our water bill is going down. We're recycling more, and I pay about 1/6 the cost for the same piece of paper to go to recycling than if it went to the landfill.
Gotcha.
So these things are not only green, but they save us green.
Right.
They save us money. Some of the bigger initiatives will require more capital funding and will have longer paybacks. But we've been targeting things that have a payback within a year or two. And a lot of them have been implemented out of our operating budgets. And we look for opportunities to get other funding, grant funding. We participated over the last few years in a local program called Grants to Green, and got a $50,000 grant from them and another $80,000 from Home Depot to reduce our energy use in our Science Center building, our largest energy user on campus. And that's been very effective. We also entered that building into the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, which is a citywide effort for buildings across Atlanta to reduce their energy and water consumption. Additionally, we're in the process of completing a water audit of all of our facilities and identifying we still have some older toilets in some of those residence halls that consume a lot of water and showers that consume a lot of water. So particularly in the residence halls where we have 1,400 women living on campus, we're looking to try to change those things out in the near future and reduce that water impact. And the payback on that is less than 2 years. So we'll see further reductions in our water bill.
Yeah.
And I think one other thing that, again, sort of goes back to some of the early part of this conversation around what does sustainability really mean, and again, looking at the interconnectedness and the interdependence of so many of these things. I think if you're a business and you're looking at a particular new product line or a new vendor, new supplier of some product or service that has a sustainability benefit, but it costs a little bit more, it is easy to walk away from those kind of opportunities if you're just looking at that one dimension of it. But say with something like a green cleaning line, what if you start to look at some of your bigger operational cost around labor and look at your healthcare cost? And are there ways that you can start to understand the correlation between those employee healthcare costs, employee productivity, lost work days because of some of the sustainability issues in your operations that you're maybe not addressing? And so you invest a little bit on one side of that equation and you see huge dividends on the other. So it's looking at those interdependencies and knowing that none of these things happen in isolation.
And I think we know that, but it's very difficult conceptually sometimes as you're thinking about these things to kind of put all that together and think in a more systemic way. I want to give both of you the opportunity to let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you and your organizations. So I'll start with Art. You've been a wealth of information on how to think about some of these things in a very specific organizational context. If some of our listeners wanted to get more knowledge from you and wanted to contact you, how could they do that?
Well, on the Spelman College website, www.spelman.edu/sustainable, we have a sustainable Spelman webpage there. That has lots of information, a link to our climate action plan that I mentioned, profiles on some of our students and other faculty green leaders we have on campus that are very involved in these issues. We also have a Facebook page, Instagram page, and a Twitter feed. So Sustainable Spelman on Twitter and Facebook as well. We'll have information on what we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Great.
And for me, it is www.sustainableatlanta.org is our website where you can find out more about our work. We also are there on Facebook, Sustainable Atlanta. On Twitter, it's SUST_ATL is our handle. And would love to connect you with the great work that's happening around this region.
Yeah. So today we spent a lot of time. I was so interested in some of the things related to the topic. I didn't go as deep on the personal side so that people get to learn a little bit more about each of you. So I'm going to take that opportunity, Kevin, as I always do at the end, and give you this question that I ask all of my guests. And that is, think back to your 20-year-old self. And if you could give your 20-year-old self some advice, either about, you know, career, life, this issue, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I think be in the moment and don't be in such a rush to get to that next step along the way. Know that there's something that you're going to take with you from every stage of your walk ahead. And if you're so focused on that 10-year out goal, you may miss a lot of that day-to-day that ultimately can get you there.
Yeah, great. All right, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Well, back then I was learning a lot about technology, how to design buildings, how to build buildings, and not as much about people. I mean, we talked earlier about reducing resources, and I think Susan touched on a key thing, and protecting our resources, our biggest, most important resource, is our people. We get more done with sustainability on campus through our people and their eyes and their communication with other people than we do with the technological things, because how we use our resources on a day-to-day basis is something each and every one of us needs to think about, and how that impacts our environment. And each of us, as we say at Spelman, can make a choice to change the world through those actions.
Great. Well, it's been a great conversation. Great Friday. Hopefully our listeners learned some things about this whole sustainability arena that maybe they didn't know. And maybe this will also spark people today as they go about their sort of day-to-day work and what they're doing on the weekend, that they'll also think about how, as you said, individually we can each, through our actions, make a difference for those that come behind us. So join us next week on Fridays at 10 o'clock, where we talk about all things growth. So let's talk about it, because
growth matters.